Hey, this is The Real Brian, a.k.a. The Shadow, former voice and co-founder of The Underground, and you are listening to Central City Underground.
That's right, everybody. It is Central City Underground. We're back. Very excited to be here. This is CCU episode 124. I am Chris, a.k.a. The Professor. And right now, I've got some heavy-hitting pinch hitters with me here in the underground. All the way from Earth 38, we are joined by the Silver Fox. Say hello, sir.
Greetings, Central City. It is so good to be here. I am John, a.k.a. The Silver Fox, and I'm so excited to be here on Central City Underground. I've listened to every single episode, and now I get to be on one. It's so cool.
Wait, this is your first time? Wait, I listened to the show before I hosted it. So yeah, this is also, yeah. Awesome. Glad to have you here.
Yeah. It's great. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
And we are also joined in this episode, taking some time off the Wave Rider, Ms. Harley Quinn.
Hello, everybody. I am taking some time off the Wave Rider, so I've decided to just start crashing all of the podcasts.
And I like the way you introduced yourself with a good impression of Tony.
Oh, that was good. Maybe that's where I picked that
Hello,
up.
Hello, everybody.
Excellent.
We have upgraded the sound equipment here in the underground bunker.
Awesome.
But we are very excited to have both of you here joining us. And let's be honest, as we're recording this transmission, Story's voice may breach in at any moment. So be on the lookout, Central City Undergrounders. He might show up. But this episode of the podcast, again, this is number 124. And since it's been a while, we're going to cover quite a bit of content here on episode 124. We're going to talk about episode 12, episode 13, episode 14. We would talk about episode 15, but it hasn't happened yet. But we will be back for episode 15. Let's start with a little bit of commentary on The Flash, season 5, episode 12, Memorabilia. Now, when Story's voice is with us, we typically, like all great CW podcasts, start with our ratings. So why don't we start there? And Harley Quinn, why don't you go first? Because you're the lady.
Oh, thanks. Even though I'm a villain, I'll take it. All right. So I'll just go ahead and you want me to give all three of my ratings here?
We're going to go one episode at a time. And what was that, the breaching sound? Story's voice has just breached into the episode. How you doing, my friend?
Good. Hello, everybody. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're good.
Doing well.
Unfortunately, though, your breach came at a very rude time because Harley was just about to give her rating for episode 12.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt that. You go right ahead, Harley.
It's all right. It's your show, you know? I suppose I can allow it.
Oh, thanks.
I gave episode 12 8.5 out of 10 future cicadas. And specifically future. Oh, that's so creepy. And specifically,
I didn't even hit a button for that. I did that myself, everybody.
That's impressive.
That's extra creepy.
Silver Fox, our guest from Earth 38, how did you see episode 12?
I enjoyed episode 12, probably the best out of these three. So I gave this one 8 Flash bobbleheads.
Barry was very impressed with himself in this episode.
He was.
He was like a kid in a
Flash museum.
That's right, a Flash museum.
Oh no!
but speaking of gift shops, as much as I did enjoy this episode, I did give it 8 out of 10 overpriced Flash museum gift shops.
Jada, what say you?
I gave it actually the same, an 8 Flashtastic stories.
It was a good episode. From Jada's and mine perspective, this was part of the Flash world that we've been waiting for, which was, we want to go to the Flash Museum and really go into the Flash Museum. So not just the Hall of Villains, we got to see the gift shop as well. So very, very exciting. A lot of things that made us go, ooh, that we will surely get to. But Harley, what were you about to share with us?
Tom Cavanaugh's accent is starting to kill me. Maybe this is a bigger conversation. I cannot tell if his accent is bleeding over to his Reverse Flash or if it's supposed to, like if that's really Sherlock. That's what I can't figure out.
No, there was clearly a scene with him as Thawne that he went back to the French accent. And I was like, whoa.
Right? But yeah, what I can't tell is what it's well. Like. It's like, is that intentional because like Sherlock is a Thawne or is a version of Thawne? Or is it unintentional because Tom Cavanaugh is having a hard time dropping the accent and it's been making me laugh all season?
That was probably like take 63 where they were like, fine, just leave it in, whatever.
I surely hope that's not the case, that they're just like, whatever.
I don't know. I can't tell if it's distracting or not, or intentional or not. But
I mean, the accent is all over the place in general, but now it's popping up at different time periods.
Exactly, which is what makes it confusing. Because, yeah, you know how we do. We comic book nerds. We like to go all crazy on our theories, and we'll take anything we can get and run with it. So
I didn't. Enjoy
I see
it.
What you did there.
Yeah, yep. I did enjoy ice skating. Sure, look, that was cool.
He was very good on the ice. Who's not so good? Nora. Can't skate. Unbelievable.
So odd.
It's like she inherited her father's athletic ability.
Imagine that.
This was an interesting episode. Again, the whole purpose was Team Flash is attempting, and they decide to wake Grace up. And after the events of the previous episode, they remember, or really Barry channels his inner dadness and realizes, well, he's also a father or father-like, as we've known for quite some time. So they believe if they can wake Grace up, they can stop Cicada. So the plan is to use the memory machine. Cisco clearly didn't name that. And go inside of Grace's mind and Captain Cold Style, make the plan, execute the plan, and expect the plan to go off the rails. Make a new plan.
Nice callback.
This was frustrating, and I think probably what we'll hear in terms of feedback from folks in that is this continuing Nora learning how to be a hero and how to do the things that she needs to do. And in the meantime, she keeps getting herself into these problems that she doesn't know how to fix. And it literally is like training a child how to do these things. But I think we can only go so far in the storytelling with her continually having to be bailed out of these messes. And like mother, like daughter, right? Because we'll talk about it in episode 13, how Iris is on just this series long, continuous strain of getting herself into problems that she can't fix either. But I think with as far as Nora goes, I did really appreciate how they addressed in the very beginning the speech that that she gives Gideon to talk about how she's going about trying to keep these things hidden. I thought that was extremely well done. What'd you guys think?
Yeah. I loved the speech in the beginning. Nora's growing on me. I don't dislike her character, but I think sometimes I feel frustrated with her character because it feels like season one Barry all over again, which in a lot of ways that it is. So like part of me really appreciates like the parallels and the journey that she's having to go on. But another part of me is continually getting frustrated, like as a fan, because I feel like it's kind of a rehash in some ways. Does that make sense? So I don't know. Although I liked this episode the best of the three that we're going to talk about tonight, though. I mean, aesthetically, it was very well done. The story was fantastic. It was compelling, and it was very well acted from the beginning all the way through the end.
And yes, I feel like Nora did feel or does feel a lot of times like Flash season one, which is supposed to be, as you said. But with the extra details, somehow it makes it Nora's it makes it what it should be. Nora's first story, her first couple of years in superhero-dom. I kind of like it. I like the way it's unfolded, partially because of that, because before it felt a little, in the beginning it felt a little, at first it was exciting, and then it was like, okay, we've kind of seen this. But as we're getting more and more here and there, especially a lot in the story, it's making it her journey. It's making it her story. And the parallels and the differences are fun to watch. I'm enjoying it so far. Yeah, I enjoy it.
To see her go on this journey, I agree with you, Harley, that a lot of times it is frustrating to kind of see her do the season one thing, and they've even literally paralleled some of the scenes and some of the story elements, and they're applying it to her, which it's like, part of me is a little aggravated at Barry that it's like, you should sort of recognize some of this, and maybe the instant, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, the instant she came back, you should have had the coffee cup conversation with her, you know?
Yes.
Take it aside, let her know it's admirable what you want to do, but you need to go home. And, you know, we understand, we've seen the newspaper, you know, all that stuff. But specific to this episode, it's just another one of those cases of she takes a step back, and not in the rewind time kind of way. It's, you know, there have been points where she's been very mature and it looks like she's showing growth as a hero and as a person. And then, you know, she is almost like a 4-year-old speedster in this one where she decides, I'm going to do this myself. But again, what's her reason? She's hiding something. And again, we're waiting with bated breath to find out all that we can about her relationship with Eobard Thawne.
Yeah, and I think that relationship is definitely one of the more fascinating things about her. And I think that's what I'm so intrigued about, is like just trying to understand her motivations and why. And I think maybe we got a little bit of an answer as to the why at the end of this past week's episode. But I really want to flesh that relationship out more and just kind of understand why she's decided to work with her father's worst enemy. And I mean, she knew that going into it. So it's just, that's where I'm intrigued to see like that development there, and less at her development as a speedster. I mean, that's all great. And I love the parallels of season one, but I'm more intrigued by this Eobard relationship for sure.
I do have to say though, I don't really know if she knows he's her father's worst enemy.
Yeah, I think that's been enlightening to her.
Really? But it's not... we saw his suit in the Flash Museum, right? Or was that...
But there's a lot of suits and villains in the Hall of Villains. And yes, his is one of them. But I don't know that she truly understands the dynamic of that relationship between Flash and Reverse Flash.
True. That's true, because was it this episode or is it the prior episode where her and Barry have more of a conversation about Eobard specifically and giving him basically the benefit of the doubt?
Well, that was one of the themes of this episode. Can somebody who's done bad things now do good things? And she's questioning that to Barry, literally about Reverse Flash, but not telling him why she's asking, can somebody change?
Yeah, and so she's taking that and literally applying it to Eobard Thawne, but Barry's in the dark about that, of course.
Right, and Reverse Flash takes on he's the one who is the blockage, I guess, is what we'll say. And, you know, towards the end of the episode, Sherlock asks him, well, who was her defense? And that's, he really is a master detective. Accent aside, he's really good at this.
Yeah, he is. One thing I'm glad that we kind of put to bed was this relationship between Nora and Iris, and that they can be unified going forward, and we don't have this angst anymore of what their relationship looked like with her growing up and all that. So I was very glad to see that resolved. And I thought the writers did a really good job with that.
I also thought that it was done in a really unique way about how she perceived the memory. And I think it was really instrumental. It was almost like Barry became the lightning rod for Iris to be almost pulled into what she truly is as a mother. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I thought it was brilliant the way that they did that in this episode, where, of course, we're in Nora's mind, and so we see her perception, which kind of plays out exactly to how Nora has painted Iris to be. And then, of course, we come to the same realization that she then comes to, is that, hey, I'm remembering this through this lens of anger. She's like, you were always going to be the bad guy in my life because, you know, you were the one who was there. It's always the people that are there, the people that are closest, that we push away, that we treat the worst. It's just human nature. It's what we do. And it's because they're there. And so I love the way that they did that. I thought that was particularly brilliant. And I thought it really nicely moved their relationship forward and kind of put behind some of the angsty anger issues between the two of them.
And it was really heartwarming as, again, that ripple goes through and we actually see what the reality is. And it's the Iris we know being the Iris we know to her daughter, as we would expect Iris to be.
Exactly. I thought that was incredibly well acted as a mother myself. I thought that was very well done. Kudos to Candace.
But now, as with all awesome episodes of CCU, there were some things that made us go, ooh, you know, Easter eggs and little hidden things within this episode. And, you know, how do we not go to the Flash Museum, into the gift shop, and just a whole bunch of different things throughout the episode. So I have a couple of things that made me go, ooh, in this episode. First and foremost was when we get the memory machine, it comes from a place called Earth 221, which, gosh, it's like there's like an infinite number of Earths out there. I mean, so many numbers. But we get Jervis Tetch, which made me go, ooh, so is Gotham on Earth 221? And I was trying to search and find maybe the significance to 221, and I couldn't find anything significant about the number 221. But that was certainly very cool. Another thing that made me go, ooh, and I know Jade will be right there with me, and also Harley, you're a big fan of the show as well, the Flash TV show theme song,
yes,
as the ringtone of the phone. Yes. In the gift shop.
That's so great. Yeah.
Very cool.
Little things. It's the little things.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I saw Dr. Light in the Hall of Villains, which I don't think we have. Have we come across him yet?
Came across her.
Her. I'm sorry.
Dr. Yes. Light was a her, I believe, back in season one.
In present day, she is still currently running around naked and invisible.
Yes, that's her. Okay, there we go.
We never really
got
her.
In the future, they found her outfit.
Here we go. Okay.
But yeah, I would like to think that if it's in the museum, then maybe eventually she does come back and do something. I can't imagine a one-off would be worthy of a museum status.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, one could hope.
And then the other thing that made me go ooh in this episode was the name drop of Red Death, which is, I don't want to say a deep cut, but it's from relative recent comic book adventures in the Dark Metal series with Batman, where Red Death is the combination of Batman and the Flash in this metal series. What is that foreshadow? I don't know. I'm sure they'll tweak it. And I mean, they don't drop names like that for no reason. So say hello to your season 6 or season 7 villain.
That would be super interesting. I had to look that one up, but I was very impressed by them using Thread Death. I was like, ooh, I need to read about that.
Did anyone think that when they talked to him, when the history was going about Cicada, that when they talked about when he came back, that was actually Grace? Sorry.
No, I am going to interrupt you because that was the thing that made me go ooh in this episode. I totally think that when we saw future Cicada, that it was Grace. The face, it just looked a little bit more slimmer, a little bit more feminine. And I swear I saw some hair kind of tucked up behind there. So, and we know that well, we find out, I guess, by the end of the episode that the memory has now been altered. So we're not seeing necessarily the future that Nora perhaps experienced, but we're seeing the future that has been now written, or at least as I understood it. So I definitely think that the return of Cicada was Grace.
Now, when you say that, you're not saying you see her being Cicada in the monitor in her memory, but are you talking when we see in the episode inside of Grace's mind?
Well, both. I mean, so the first thing is in Nora's mind. So while we're still in Nora's mind and in Nora's memory, when we get to Cicada in the Hall of Villains, once you see that picture and that profile, to me, it definitely looked a little bit more feminine. And so I was kind of like, oh, you know, I wonder if that could be Grace, because I think that comes towards the end of the episode. Once we're kind of starting to get the reveals, I think we're going back and forth between what Nora is experiencing in Grace's mind and the reveals that she can hear everything that her uncle is saying, and that she's on his same wavelength and hating metas. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, once we see her envisioning Cicada as her protector, Cicada in her mind has that long blonde hair. So to me, she's Cicada, but she's herself as Cicada in her mind. And then also, while we're going back and forth between Nora's mind, the villain of Cicada that we see, because it says that, I don't know if they defeat him, but then they're saying that Cicada returns. And then when Cicada returns, that's when he goes on this like giant killing spree. But the return of Cicada, I think to me, it looked more feminine. So I was assuming that it was Grace. And since that's in Nora's mind, at that point, I think, I don't know if we have to assume or if they overtly say it. It's been a few weeks since I watched the episode, but that the timeline has been altered. And so Cicada, that version of Cicada is now, in my mind, Grace. So thoughts?
I don't know if I would attribute that to the timeline changing, but maybe that's what it's always been, and we just haven't seen that unfold yet. Mm-hmm. Because again, what do we learn here at the end of the episode is that, like you said, Grace is almost pulling some strings, that she's got dark matter inside of her. What's her ability? What is this done to her that she's been in this coma and she's been fully aware, as we've learned? So maybe this is part of her plan as an evil child villain. I don't know.
Oh,
jeez. But I went from feeling sorry for her to being like, no, there's something going on here.
Oh yeah. I was totally with Nora when she's like, we need to leave and she is not coming. I was like, yeah, get out. Go.
We are not exorcising this demon. John, what from this episode made you go, ooh?
I really loved the development that Ralph is getting, and to kind of see the buddy, you know, scenes that we had with him and Cisco. I really enjoyed kind of watching him take all the criticism from Cisco and not say anything and just, you know, roll with it. And then to come around and say, you know what, this wasn't about me. This was for you. And to see the result of that with the bartender and, oh shoot, her name is escaping me. I know we'll talk about her more from this past week, but, Camilla, thank you. The thriller. but that just really warmed my heart. Just the more we get to know Dibny, the more we get to interact with him. I'm so glad that he has been brought on board.
Yeah, I like him as well. I'm liking where they're going with his character.
He's good people. All right, so while we were about to throw it to Story's voice, he had to breach out, and he may breach back in. We shall see. Stay tuned. Same Flash time, same Flash channel. Here we go. So moving on, again, since we're covering multiple episodes of the show in this one episode of the podcast, we're going to share a little bit of feedback from this episode, because we had some great discussion already with the great Harley Quinn and the Silver Vox. Very exciting. So let's do a little bit of feedback, and our old friend X-Force 11 left us a message. Take it away, X-Force 11.
Hello, CCU. It's Jeff, X-Force 11. I enjoyed a lot of aspects about this episode, really getting to delve into minds and kind of getting to see some more of the Sherlock comparisons and things like that. Cool. Shout out to the Mad Hatter in this episode. But I am just not happy with this, again, going back to this Metacure coming, like Jada said, from the X-Men universe, where you have a cure and you're going to use it on the villain for good. Who's to say somebody can't use it on the heroes? I'm just not happy about that. I just see that as them going down this road, because you can't do the wrong thing for the right reasons and suffer no consequences. And I just don't know. And that's really what we're also seeing with the Nora storyline, with she's trying to stop Cicada, and who's this major killer, and she's using a villain to do that. And golly, it's just bad parallels there. I'm just not happy about the cure thing again. Those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 out.
Thank you, Jeff. And Jeff, while we were playing your message, Story's voice has breached back in. But first, John, Jess, what thoughts on Jeff's email, voicemail?
Yeah, he brings up a great point. We didn't really talk about the progress of the metahuman cure. I think he's got a great point that they are being really arbitrary in how they think this is going to work. And I think they're going to see, I just think that's going to become part of the story, is they're going to see the unintended consequences of this. Like, one of them is going to have this use against them, and they're going to have to figure out, okay, yes, they...
Wait, hold on. That's not going to be how it goes down, because Caitlin and Cisco, they shook hands, and they said that they are never going to do anything bad with it. They shook hands. I saw it. I watched it again. They shook hands. So you are wrong.
I feel like that seals the deal.
Yeah. So long as it's the only two of them that has it, then that's great. Yeah.
There was a third hand in that handshake that you don't see, and his name is Plot Device.
He's always present.
That's right.
Always present.
John, I thought you had a really good point. I like the way you phrase this as unintended consequences, because I think that's definitely going to be the case with this whole Metacure storyline. And I like the way that Jeff keeps saying that they're doing the wrong thing for the right reasons. Right? Wrong? Did I say right thing, wrong reasons? I meant wrong thing, right reasons.
That's what you said.
That is what I said. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
So yeah, I thought that Jeff's point of the wrong thing for the right reasons was excellent, and that parallels not only the Metacure storyline, but Nora working with Thawn. I like that you pulled that out there, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. And we also got a great email from Montefescu, which I am going to summarize, because you were kind enough to send us, as only you do, detailed feedback for all three of these episodes. So I'm going to cut down this first email to, you rated this episode 10 out of 10. You really like this episode. And obviously we all enjoyed the episode as well. And we thank you for sending in the feedback. You highlighted that you believe the acting was flawless. You believe that the directing was on point. Again, this episode was directed by Rebecca Johnson. And you were also a fan of the writing. You were also a big fan of the memorabilia that appeared throughout the episode, noting that we had a modern actual Flash comic book with comic book Cicada on the cover. But I don't know if anybody here noticed on the panel, but that particular cover of the actual Flash comic book, it was Wally West on the cover, not Barry Allen.
That's funny.
And there was also the Rod versus King Shark cover as well.
Yes, that was nice. Considering that's what we have coming up.
They've been teasing that one hard. I mean, they teased that in episode one this season.
Yeah, they've been talking about that one a lot, although I must say I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, for the amount of money they're spending on that episode, most likely, it is going to be a big-time episode. So we are going to sprinkle in more feedback as we talk about, again, we're talking about episodes 12, 13, and 14. And I think that about wraps up the conversation for episode 12. Undoubtedly, we certainly didn't talk about some things in the episode, but it is what it is, guys. On to episode 13, season 5, episode 13, titled Goldface. Let's go back around the horn and let's do our ratings for this episode. And again, lady first.
All right. I gave this episode 7 out of 10 creative ways to have Barry lose his speed. Because I feel like we're doing that a lot this season.
King Shark and Grodd come at a price.
That is fair. That is fair. Good point.
Not to throw this episode off the rails, but since they're making a big deal, and we're going to have King Shark. Do you think there's any chance in this episode we hear Baby Shark?
Oh, no.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my goodness.
If anybody's going to do it, it's going to be Cisco.
No, please don't.
He will drop a doo 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 doo.
Oh, absolutely. That has to be.
I think I'm going to be disappointed if it doesn't happen, even though it's going to be stuck in my head for weeks.
Oh, no. Yes, it will. Yes.
John, what did you think of the episode, episode 13?
I was kind of disappointed with this one. I just kind of put it right in the middle. I gave this one 6 anonymous criminal colleagues.
Nice.
Those were definitely modern day Batman 66 henchmen in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, wow. Yes. Right.
Their shirts were just missing the word henchmen. Number 1. Number 2. Number 3. For me, this was my lowest rated of these three episodes that we're going to talk about, and I gave it 7 out of 10 hand-tightened armored car bolts. How was Barry, without superpowers, able to remove the bolts from the inside of an armored car?
Hand-wavy. Hand-wavy. Comic book science.
That's right.
Explain nothing.
Yeah. What was it that he broke off that allowed him to do that? I couldn't tell what it was.
He broke off a piece of metal of the inside of an armored car.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Of course.
Duh.
Tony and Joe are rolling over in their... I mean, they're not dead. But...
No. Let's get dark fast.
This got dark fast. I liked this episode. It was good. I gave it 6.5 because it felt very average to me. 6.5 gangster berries. Because the chemist, he went pretty hard. That's an interesting character.
Foreshadowing your season 8 villain.
Right. Oh, no. Oh, jeez.
Bad berry. I've already done it.
Bad berry.
Yeah, so, okay, question right off the bat. Why does Goldface need these two people to pull this off when he's got 38 ones that they shoot down already? I mean, I didn't count them, but it felt like a lot of crew. Like, so why did he need these two? These were some of the questions that I had for this episode.
I'm going to help you out, John. Repeat after me.
Yes.
Explain. Nothing.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Zemmour. Yes.
I think Barry's mouth is what got him into it. The reason that Goldface thought he needed them was because the quote-unquote chemist was so good at what he did, they'd never get caught. It was insurance that they wouldn't get caught when they stole this.
That's true. Barry, in his mind, created the perfect villain.
It was a little weak. As a plot point in and of itself. But I mean, I think we all, I think this was our lowest rated episode of the three that we're going to talk about. And I think for good reason. I mean, if you don't think about it too hard, it was kind of fun, but
It definitely was fun.
Oh yes. It was great.
If you're a fan of laser tag, this episode was great.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
That was a fun sequence.
Oh,
It was fun. It was pretty cool.
It was. I thought it was pretty cool. It was one of those things that made me go ooh in this particular. I don't know if we want to jump to that, but I'm jumping to it because I thought it felt like a video game. I kind of liked it, you know, Ralph and Barry. They had the classic like back to back, like you know, turn around. That is fun. I didn't think too hard about it.
That was my problem. I think I thought about it.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah. I just kind of stopped. I was like, I'm just going to watch and just see what happens. And I think I'll like this episode a lot more.
They never dealt with the Toastmasters, right? So, like, that's still a thing. So, do we think we're ever going to come back to that?
That would be nice to see. It would be another example of consequences and whatnot. And they kind of made too much of a point of it. I would think for them to just leave it as a dangling thread, but these things have been done before. I don't know.
What? TV shows leaving loose ends? But actually, to jump on the ooh bandwagon a little bit, this all went down at, if you didn't catch it, Ivo Labs?
Oh, yes.
Could this be a holdover from the consequences of the Elseworlds?
Yeah, like flesh that out a little bit. Like, what do you mean?
In trying to rewrite Destiny back to the way it was, is this something that didn't quite get rewritten back the right way? I mean, we've seen Ivo Labs before in Arrow, and now here we have this facility that happens to be in Central City. It's got this, you know, 3D printing technology. Is this a small plant for Crisis, maybe?
Hmm. Well, and this is where Amazo came from, was Ivo Labs. So
absolutely,
which was a direct tie into the Elseworlds. So yeah,
who's to say there's not a Mazo here? That would be great.
That would be pretty interesting. I think they're gonna start doing more and more. They're gonna keep weaving in these Elseworlds nods. I mean, they keep doing it with Gotham City and I mean, we've gotten nods across all of the shows, you know, to Batwoman and Gotham. So I think they're gonna continue to kind of weave in some of these things from Elseworlds, but I do like that it's a good point that maybe Destiny didn't quite get rewritten exactly as we thought, or maybe this is one of those like slight changes that I like that. I dig that as a theory.
Well, the conference of Adlers noticed that he had him take care of the alimony on Earth 38 through Superman, so that was a direct callback. So yeah,
that was
great.
And really, you can't discount this as a possibility because, and Jade and I have talked about this before, we first saw Nora back in the crossover of last season. And so they played the long game with her, and that's where she came up. So Jade and I have been theorizing for quite some time that maybe there's going to be a whole lot of plants and, you know, does this crossover happen earlier in the season? Is it something that's more than just 4 episodes in a week when we get to next season? Is it something that's going to shake up all the shows as a result of what happens on Flash this season? So certainly a lot of time to explore that, but something that is not new to this show.
No. Well, isn't Crisis happening in the fall? Wouldn't that be fascinating if Crisis starts everything instead of being our mid-season? Because normally I would feel like a mid-season thing would be either billed as a mid-season finale or maybe more of a winter, since it always tends to occur in December, but they did say fall. So what if we start with Crisis? Like, what if the way that Flash ends, I don't know exactly how everything is running, and Legends was not included in Elseworlds, and we have a bizarre timeline anyway. So if Flash is the last to end, I think it's very possible we end with remind me, the red skies with Barry disappearing, would we end there, or is that what starts Crisis, or is that how Crisis ends? Someone just needs to refresh my memory a little bit. But
red skies would be how Crisis ends, and you know, okay. Flash disappears in Crisis. Yeah.
Right. So that would be an ending. Okay. So maybe not quite that, but however Flash ends could be a direct lead in potentially to Crisis. If we were to open with that, be an interesting thing to do.
Or maybe each show has a post credit scene in their season finale that potentially teases, hey, everything's going to start with Crisis, which would be cool. I mean, cause you figure we had episodes of Arrow and Flash where, Stephen Amell and Grant Gustin, their screen time was affected because of filming crossover stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In their episode 10s respectively. So if now they can start with the first 4 to 6 episodes combined filming over the summer, I mean, we're getting a little ahead, but it's fun.
We are. We kind of went on a little bit of a tangent, but sorry, Jada, go ahead.
Yeah. So question. Yeah. Question about Goldface. And again, I'm lacking from the comic knowledge, but was this a good portrayal of him as comes from the comics?
I have to admit, I don't know Goldface from the comics. So yeah, it was a great portrayal.
Thank you.
He was originally a villain and foe of the Hal Jordan Green Lantern.
Ah, there you go.
And then later in his comic book existence, I became a Flash villain. And I'm not going to lie, I'm cheating. I'm looking this up. He's the ex-husband of Blacksmith.
Yeah.
And he first appeared in July of 1965 in Green Lantern number 38.
Very.
But he was a criminal scientist, and he drank a gold-based serum that he'd been working on, and it granted him super strength and invulnerability. And he also exhibited, surprise, a golden glow. But this is comic book Goldface.
Yeah. Well, he kind of Max Steeled up there like we have on Legends. That was kind of cool.
Kind of.
Well, we haven't seen him doing that, so I guess they could change the color on the effect.
All right, don't get me started on the steel. I lack of steel.
Uh-oh.
We won't talk about that. But with the gold, it was kind of, like you said, the invulnerability portion, because it was underneath of his skin, because we didn't realize it until they hit him and, like, scraped away a little bit of his skin. You saw that he was, like, gold underneath.
Yeah.
That was kind of an interesting take. It was, like, he was, like, infused with gold or something, like, as a... I don't know if it's like a protective element or what. But I
think the important thing to take note of is that he is the one who is operating this underground, literally, black market of high-tech weapons.
Yeah.
From the comic books, that was Amunet Black's territory.
Didn't they reference Amunet Black at one point in this episode?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. I don't remember what the tie-in or connection was, but yeah. So that's,
yeah, Earl Cox was talking about how she's still away, but that Snake, I think, was the one who was kind of coordinating this for her. So,
okay.
If I understood that correct, so
Dibny's friend, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for a moment, I thought they were going to make more of his belly. they had the one joke, and it was seemed so out of place that I thought something was going to happen. I don't know what I could even possibly imagine would happen, but it didn't go anywhere. Well, it was weird.
Alien would pop out.
What was weird is they had to include the preview of him in the previously on Flash, and then he's in like a 2-second scene.
Which might be why I thought there was going to be more, because, you know, they normally bring up the important things that are touchstones in this episode, and it wasn't really anything important about that. So maybe it'll show up later or something? Or I don't
He's
know.
He's a sleazeball. I could do without him.
It's a good way to see how far Dibny's come.
The only thing that made me really go ooh in this episode, because, I mean, again, we talked about what we think of the fight and how they set that all up, but the Council of Wells' Wives.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that made me go ooh there was the when she was talking about how he faked his own death twice. And the other ones were like, well, honey, that second one was more on you.
Yeah. Second one's on you.
That Council of I like that they are still trying to incorporate the Council of Wells. So I thought using the wives was an interesting touch. It also kind of, I don't know, it kind of feels more like going back to like Nora trying to be a little bit more paralleled with like Barry season one. She kind of had that awkward like, oh no, I'm really, I thought this would be a great idea, like a great surprise. Like I'm trying to help you. And he's like, now they know where I'm at. So now they can track me down. So that was kind of a fun blunder. It felt very Barry-esque.
The other thing that was cool in there was who would be potentially coming after him?
Oh, Breacher.
Breacher.
Oh, yes, yes.
That was a nice callback.
I hope that's foreshadowing.
Who has retired to a interdimensional alimony collector?
I thought
if anybody.
I thought his breaching powers, weren't they like kind of waning?
Yeah, since Sisko didn't take the job, I don't think we know specifically who that is anymore. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe it's Gypsy.
Yeah. Ooh.
Could be.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, another confrontation coming.
I don't know if we could handle a Sisko love triangle.
Oh, dear. I don't think they're going that route. I think they're just trying to be a nice tie-in.
So how about Iris being stupid again? What do we think, huh?
Season one Flash.
So many callbacks to season one. I mean, she's doing the reporting thing again. That's nice.
That is nice. That is nice. Yeah. It is nice to see her having a job again and actually doing something instead of just staring at a bunch of monitors and yelling at people, which is valuable. Don't get me wrong, but...
I don't know. I just think as self-aware and like incredibly intelligent as Candace Patton, and at some point she would just be like, no, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the second that she breaks in, of course, I mean, it's just classic TV trope, but
I know.
It was interesting to see how she tried to get out of it. And then, I mean, she almost had him and then she went and grabbed her purse and I was like that. So I kind of liked the progression. I mean, like it was dumb to break in and get caught where, you know, a serial killer that's incredibly powerful lives, but it was kind of fun to kind of see her like try and get out of it. And then ultimately like kind of get a one up on him. So I like that. That was a little satisfying at the end.
You know, kudos and props to Cicada for being super observant.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're that paranoid, you kind of have to be.
Yeah. And it was so creepy, too.
I love Chris Klein's performance. I was incredibly skeptical when I heard they cast him as a villain. And I was like, I don't know, but I really, really love him as Cicada. He's doing a great job.
He's really creepy.
It's a sound effect that does it.
And he's got that two-tone theme too, like that. Yeah, anytime it's brought up, so
yeah.
I noticed that as well.
And she destroyed the dollhouse.
Oh, I thought that was the end of her when she did that. I was like, oh, that's it. He's gonna definitely snap and she's toast. But no,
that made me go, ooh, no, you didn't.
Okay, so here's another small problem that I had with this episode. Does the dagger light up only around Meadows, or does it light up when he wants it to? Because when he first pulled it out on her when she was like hiding behind the couch and at the front door and so on and so forth, it didn't light up. But then towards the end when he was like throwing it at her, it lit up. And I thought we had established that it was only like it like picked up Meadows. I don't know. I'm having some weirdness with this.
You know, I think that it acts as a meta detector.
Ding. But
that's pretty much what it does. But when he uses it, I'm just going to headcanon it away as his powers flow through it and it glows because it's, you know, it's pretty.
That's kind of where I'm going with it, too. It makes me feel better.
It's pretty.
I mean, yes, it's a meta detector. I love that. Oh my gosh, that is the best. But I kind of took it that when he's actually using it, it's then his power that's activating it. Because he, with the shard in him, he is technically a meta.
True.
So that's what's giving him his powers to fly away and do all the crazy stuff and be the reason we can't catch him. Right?
That's true.
I'd like to challenge the Undergrounders to maybe do a little fan art where you have Cicada walking along the beach with his dagger, meta detecting.
Yes, please do that.
Yes.
But he's got to be like old Cicada, wearing like old flip flops and a beach hat.
And socks up to his knees. Yes.
And socks up to his knees.
Argyle socks.
I think the important piece here is we get Nora learning how to manipulate the timeline with Reverse Flash's instructions. You know, all the different things she did to make that happen. And the only question I have with that is, was it just by chance that it happened to be the Earth One version of his previous wives? Or was that calculated by Nora, and or did Reverse Flash tell her exactly who and where and what, and you know how? I imagine he's probably pulling the strings hardcore from 2049. But that whole sequence of having her do that was, I think, really well done and a major plot point.
But you know, it also feels like it could be a major plot hole. That's quite specific information to have about what needs to go where, when to produce what outcome. I kind of want some explanation.
He said a man doesn't wear another man's face without knowing everything about him, not just whatever he said, but through all the multiverses, right?
Yes.
And so I don't
know. Which was weird and creepy.
And this is the whole thing I have with Sherlock. Is he Eobard? Or is he not? And I think you can make the case either way. But I'm leaning more toward he just is Eobard.
Okay, so then so we talked about this already, that Nora, and we're seeing from our perspective, we're seeing Nora do a lot of season one things that Barry went through.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way you just described that, Barry in season one also goes and gets to a point where Harrison Wells is not who he says he is.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point, is Nora going to find out, and will the team find out, that Sherlock is not who he says he is? And again, somehow, you know, because again, in 2049, that's the version after Earth X that now he's been captured, but has obviously in the present day, he hasn't been captured yet. He's captured in 2049. Is this something he did to again, screw with Barry, and he's there in the, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, yeah, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Yes.
But then to which I say, why do they spend so much time with him decoding the symbols?
Exactly.
So then he wouldn't know that he is the Reverse Flash.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point.
It is, but I wonder if he's just, if there's part of Nora's story that he still needs, like he doesn't know, and so therefore, I don't know.
So something here in the present day unlocks in him that he is the Reverse Flash?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, that is a great point. So,
like, is there going to be a point where he realizes, wait, that's my own handwriting in the book?
I think it's kind of like, if he can't recognize the handwriting straight away, I think that's probably a good indicator that could be a differentiator between which is Eobard and which is truly a version of a Harrison Wells. Even though Eobard is wearing Wells's face and knows him so well, I mean, kind of going back to the whole thing about manipulating events, I thought that was brilliant and I loved it. But he, Eobard does say, like, I mean, who's the master at manipulating all of these things throughout time? And I mean, he, you know, he's like, I'm the only one that can do this. And so, I mean, he can. And so I do kind of believe that he knows Harrison Wells that well enough that he could literally move a coffee cup and all of a sudden, you know, his wife, another version of his wife enters, you know, Sherlock's life.
Or were there a series of Nora time jumping? I'm using terms from another show. Has Nora been time trapped? Did she have to time travel multiple times to set that up the right way that we don't see that happen?
Yeah, I had thought of that as well, like her little time hacks, but I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I think this was just it, like a mini time hack. So like she goes and gets the advice from Eobard. She kind of takes note, writes it. I don't know if she has to write it down or if she can remember it. I don't know if it's one of those timey-wimey things that she has to like put it in the code so that it doesn't get changed. And then I felt like when she was back, especially because is this the point in the episode where he was kind of like narrating what was happening?
He did narrate that whole sequence.
Yeah. So I kind of took that as, here, I'm going to tell you exactly what to do. And then we get to see her like executing it. So I kind of took that as she went to 2049 for advice, went back, fixed everything up. And then those events just fell right into place, which is another minute change to the timeline. Obviously. But yeah. But it was, I guess, technically seemed like an unplanned one from my perspective. I don't know if it is from Eobard's perspective. Because I think he's definitely got more ulterior motives than he's letting on.
Oh, there's a lot we haven't been led on to yet.
Oh, yeah. Nor either. I mean, he's obviously totally manipulating her.
She is so gullible.
Very gullible. I wonder if he knows that this particular, I keep wanting to call her Irene, what's her name? Renee Adler? Renee? Yeah. I wonder if he knows this particular Renee is a meta.
He finds out.
I think so.
Oh, Eobard, sorry.
Oh, yeah, if Eobard knows, right.
And how is that going to play into everything?
Exactly.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
I wonder if he loses her. And that that facilitates his change towards Thawne, if Sherlock is Thawne in any way. Maybe we're just that far back in his timeline.
Yeah, the whole point of that, though, was just to cause a distraction so that he would stop investigating Nora so that he wouldn't figure out that Nora is working with Thawne. Ultimately. I don't know. Interesting.
All in good time.
Yeah.
All I know is, as much as I like time travel, this is giving me a headache.
Yes.
We haven't even gotten to the time travel episode.
Yeah, we haven't even. Oh, geez.
So for this, I mean, I think, again, that's the major plot point of this episode that's worth taking out. Because I think the actual Barry stuff with Ralph, I think that's secondary. Because Nora, again, I think she steals it, and what she's dealing with, that's the focus here. We did get feedback for this episode, and we got another great email from Montefescu that starts out with Monty here doing another happy dance. Quote, what a lesson in how to write a superhero show. I don't know if he's being sarcastic or not, because we hated this episode.
Hates a strong term.
I hate it. Love it.
I mean, I feel like it's a bad episode if it's not an 8, 9, or a 10. I don't like these average episodes. All right, but anyway, so, to pull a couple of quotes out of Montefescu's email, a little bit about Iris. How about the Iris plot line? Finally, Candace Patton gets to go toe to toe with Orlin, and surprise, surprise, she puts him down mano a mano. That was some good direction and stunting. Montefescu's favorite part of the episode is the Nora and Sherlock matchmaker subplot. I suppose I should throw in Kimberly Williams Paisley's Renee Adler 2, which, shout out, Father of the Bride, fantastic set of movies. I threw that in there myself. But back to Montefescu's email. Quote, but I actually want to concentrate on Tom Cavanaugh. and Jessica Parker Kennedy's storylines. It is hard to write such dramedy and make it work because the knife edge of sublime into ridiculousness is so narrow, but the writers pulled it off. It works. He was a fan of the directing and gave this episode, as I do the math, 10 out of 10.
See, this isn't fair. I was telling Chris before we started that I get cranky and upset Montefiore every single week. And he's here giving these, you know, his 5 out of 5s, and yeah, which equal 10 out of 10. And I'm upset by this.
I feel like that's valid.
You don't even watch. Stop it.
I could watch and send in cranky emails if you like.
I would love that. I would love that.
Oh, crap.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hijack. I'm sorry. Moving on.
Yeah. Where do we go now?
So now we can go into the most recent episode of The Flash, and that would be season 5, episode 14. Great title, Cause and Excess. So once again, let's take it around the horn with our ratings for episode 14. Take it away, Harley.
I gave this one 8 out of 10. Groundhog Days, that Legends did better. I'm sorry. I did really like this episode, but you can't.
That? Is that the Wave Rider throwing shade on us?
That's right. I loved that Zari episode. That was good. So good.
That was good. Anyway, I'm not gonna lie, that was a good episode. I gave it a 9 out of 10. Hey, where's Jay Garrick when you need him? Oh wait, Barry gets it.
Love it.
Oh. I gave this one 7. Let's do the time warp again.
I think I used that as my rating on our Legends episode, for the record.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. So you only gave us a 7.
Yeah, I enjoyed Memorabilia more, but this was really good. This was good. I had some execution problems with this one, but yeah. How about you, Jada? What did you give it?
I gave it an 8.5 frustrated excesses. Because as she got more and more frustrated, I enjoyed it more. It's probably wrong, but I enjoyed it more because that meant that it would keep...
You enjoyed seeing her suffer.
Here we go.
No. I enjoy seeing her get out of it. I like the timey-wimey aspect of it. I like the whole, Groundhog Day aspect of it. And seeing her frustrated like that just meant that she was determined to get it finished. I liked it.
We saw her grow. We saw her really have an experience where she thought, oh, this will be no problem. I could fix this. And she, like Dad, had to learn this lesson. And again, Barry helps her at the end of the episode with the coffee cups. She had to learn this lesson herself. And she wasn't going to learn it, as much as I joked early in this episode, she wasn't going to learn this if he had originally told her about this way back at the beginning of the season. She had to experience this and learn that you don't have that much control over time, which I think should plant a seed in her head. Like, is the timeline malleable?
Yeah, I think this episode should definitely send up, I don't know if some red flags, but just some questions at the very least about what Eobard Thawne is truly doing with her and how much he's just manipulating her. So we'll see if she kind of comes to that realization, confronts him about it.
You know what it's going to come down to? Is it's going to be a classic case of, if the teenage daughter had come to her parents sooner with her problem, it could have been solved in, what, maybe 3 or 4 episodes, and we would have had the shortest season ever. But she's young, she thinks she's got it figured out, and she creates more problems for herself.
Yeah.
Just on a superhero scale.
Well, this would have been the earliest. We tackled a big bad. You can't have that.
Right? Yeah. It's interesting because she's new. She's still new to the whole superheroing thing. Like, this is a hard way to learn your lessons. I lost my train of thought. That's great.
Hold on. We can just rewind time for you.
Try again. No. Talking about unintended consequences, I succinctly missed Jesse Martin in this episode. Although, I will
just
say
this episode.
Well, because here's the thing: when Barry was having the coffee cup episode, Grant Gustin was like channeling Jesse L. Martin, right? And these were the kinds of conversations that we would have between Barry and Joe in season one, right? And so, unintendedly, right, Jesse was out, you know, still dealing with his injury, but what an opportunity for Grant to step up to have that kind of conversation. I mean, this to me was the best part of this episode. But man, I really felt and really just the longing and the missing of Jesse from the series, and just the presence that he brings. Grant did a great job, but that role I think just belongs to Joe and to Jesse, and I really, really want him back.
Amen.
I agree. We certainly want him back, and we want Papa Joe. But now, did I see the scene differently then by thinking he was more channeling Jay?
He literally
gave the same speech, and
yeah.
When he gave the speech, I recognized it for what it was, passing on knowledge, and he gets to do it to his daughter. He might not get to do it in the future, and I thought that was great and all, but I did not realize, or I did not recognize that it was possibly me missing Jesse L. Martin as well. You're right, I didn't think of that at all, that should have been him giving that speech. That's what he does, that's his role. Makes me look at that a little bit differently now. I enjoyed it, I thought it was great, I thought Grant Gustin did it.
But he wouldn't have had that talk with Nora.
No.
It was Barry taking on the Joe role to his daughter.
Right, yeah. Not the speech in particular, but just the comforting, yes.
Yeah, it was almost like an interesting melding of the two, because in the words that he was saying and the advice he was giving, it was directly speaking Jay Garrick's words, right? But in his actions and his mentoring and his body language is not quite the right word, but the kind of like his mannerisms and the way that he was, you know, helping Nora, that was very Joe West. So it's kind of an interesting combination of the two.
Absolutely. And for me, again, just to go back to the J piece, when I watch it, so anybody who still has it DVR, go back and rewatch this scene. I feel like there's a point where Barry just has this look on his face, like he's got the mug in his hand and he's like, this is what I need to tell her. And it just seemed to click for him, and I thought it was very clear on his face what he had to say.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, he as soon as he said sound, he's like, time travel has consequences. So I loved that they weaved in the Jay Garrick speech almost word for word. It was a very nice callback.
It was actually almost a very important callback, because it really shows the development. It shows, even though it was a speech, it shows more than tells us the development that Barry's been through when he can recognize the importance of that speech. It didn't just go in one ear and out the other. He's relived it so many times. It's important knowledge that he had to pass on. I enjoyed it.
And really, since that encounter with Jay Garrick, he hasn't had any time travel issues.
No, I mean, has he really done much time travel, Barry?
I mean, he did this when he went back with Nora to those different points in
the 100th
episode.
Yeah.
To do the hacks, but nothing where he's gone back to really manipulate time.
Right.
Okay, speaking of that, can I bring up the time wraiths We haven't really talked about them. Is now a good time?
What wraiths?
Exactly.
These wraiths you speak of.
Exactly. So that's why I'm kind of curious everyone's take, because I'm having to do some serious like head canoning for myself to kind of figure out and at least make it work for me as to why these time wraiths are not being triggered by anything that Nora is doing. So I'm kind of taking like what Eobard says at the end of this episode, where he is the master of time travel and the only one that can do it correctly, because until what happened on Legends, he wasn't being chased by any sort of like time wraith or Black Flash or anything like that. So because he's basically like teaching Nora, is that one why they're not appearing? Because she's making such like detailed, minute changes along the way to very discreetly manipulate the timeline, as opposed to like when Barry went back, it was like a chainsaw. He was just like hacking things left and right. It was Legends everywhere. Like there was no precision, no surgical anything. So is that when the time rates get triggered? What does the panel think?
Well, let me say this. The instant she did the satellite, that was not a minor. That's not a time hack.
That's true. That was pretty big. That's a pretty big thing.
You and your Wave Rider ship should have shown up for that one.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't, you know, some sort of magical fugitive, so it's not on our radar. Come on.
That's right. Wrong season.
Yeah. That was so last season.
For like 3 seasons.
You know,
Oh, go ahead. No, please.
I was going to say, well, first of all, yeah, I'll accept that as headcanon. Sure, that sounds great. because there is no real reason for the time wraiths to not be there. I do like the idea that it's a process. It's a certain set of mechanics that Eobard Thawne has to instruct Nora in order to sidestep or avoid the wraiths or to avoid activating the wraiths or whatever. But that all falls apart exactly as Professor just said when you think about the very first thing she did. It's really hard.
The other thing that came up for me was, maybe the wraiths only hunt evil speedsters, but then there was that point in maybe season one or two where they did come after Barry for something, which made me say, oh, then maybe they only go after evil and novice speedsters, to which then you can say, well, Nora is a novice speedster in a point in time where she's not supposed to be.
Exactly. I think that's probably the biggest glaring point, is that she's very obviously in a point in time where she's not supposed to be. It so feels like Flashpoint all over again. So I don't know. I'm trying to understand the difference.
And she's not a time remnant, because then there's also, do wraiths only go after remnants? But
was Barry a time remnant when he was being, wasn't he the one being chased? Geez.
I think after that, the wraiths all got together and they had a reorganizational structural redesign of the organization.
They went to the portal instead.
John, what's your take on the wraiths or lack thereof?
I guess we could hand wave all this when Barry came out of the Speed Force back in season four, that a lot of this stuff could have been reset at that point because he'd spent so much time there. And we really still don't understand why he had to, you know, go in there at the end of season three. Like, I never really got why that was so important. But anyway, from all the time that he spent in there, maybe when he emerges and they go through all the stuff with DeVoe and everything, maybe all the rules have changed. And I don't know. This house is bitching, and I don't know.
So, if I understand you correctly, he spent time in the Speed Force and developed wraith immunity.
Yes,
exactly. And was able to pass that on genetically.
Exactly.
Or he spent time in the Speed Force, which recalibrated the Speed Force, eliminating the time.
Thank you, Harley. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah.
But we did see the Wraith show up and knock Zoom out of the timeline when Zoom was chasing them in the 100th episode.
Oh, really? Yes, we did. Crap. Sorry.
See, I was going to ask that question, well, you know, but I really didn't want the answer.
Forgot about that.
Zoom is like a chaotic force. Maybe it's a matter of chaos and order. Maybe it's a matter of balance.
Yeah, a matter of balance, exactly. Maybe this was meant to happen.
Okay, again. Explain nothing.
Hello, everybody.
Someone really needs to go back and pull that explain nothing clip. All right, well, sorry. Time rates sort of totally derailed us.
It had to be brought up.
I know. I was just curious what everybody thought. And
I was saying, maybe in his time in the Speed Force, Barry became part of the Council of Wraiths.
There we go.
It's a council for everything.
So he's good with them.
There we go.
there is a council for everything.
So in this episode, just to kind of pull us back to some stories, we have Nora trying to fix this moment that, again, and they reference Legends as maybe this is one of those moments that the Legends talks about, that it's a fixed point where this happens. And we see Nora do this 52, 53 times. Hello, DC, new 52. Mm-hmm. And she just can't fix it. No matter what she does, somebody dies.
Yeah. And I like that they tied it into Legends, and that it could have been one of these fixed points. Now, they were ultimately able to change it, so I guess that sort of throws that theory out the window.
Mm-hmm. Right, so it's not a fixed point because they were able to hack it, which was visually really cool.
It was.
Oh, yeah.
It was, but I didn't fully understand it. Like, was Nora, like, reversing what Vibe and Killer Frost and Ralph would, like, was she, like, reversing them at the same time as she was coming in? Like, was that?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so that's
why you see them go backwards through the breach while she's going through the two that he created. But I would imagine, science hand-wavy, she's moving faster than the breaches she's rewinding him closing.
He
opens the two breaches.
Yeah.
She runs through them while at the same time rewinding time as she's passing through the breaches.
Yeah, so it looked like she was using all three of them to slow her down just the right amount, so that they could just affect that very small portion of time and kind of rewind just that point just enough.
Hmm. So it's almost like she was in flash time, but we were not.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. So from her perspective, it would be neat to see that go down truly in flash time.
I feel like we got a few hints of it. It kind of went back and forth because we would see her in, like, real time, and then I feel like when she was going through the breaches and we saw her, like, going through, like, Killer Frost's whatever ice, I guess, that looked more like it was in flash time to me. But then it would kind of switch back to, like, real time when they were coming in and out of the breaches.
And then ultimately she repositions Cicada to not be able, she that the dagger he just threw is now coming back to the spot where he threw it from, so that's why he gets hit with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, like, why didn't they just squish him like a bug when he's lying on the ground?
Or freeze him.
Anything.
Vibe him in
space. He just flies away.
Do you know how many episodes left? They couldn't do that.
Well, no. Jeez. Here's what could have happened. Throw him to Earth, fill in the blank. Not space, which he could come back from. True. I don't know what they were thinking there.
Yeah, right.
Get him to another, to that, whatever that dead Earth is. And then you have the rest of the season to explore Thawne. That's all we want. I don't need Cicada. I want more Thawne.
Well, honestly,
Thawne is like cowbell to the Flash.
Honestly, I mean, what we don't really even need Orlin anymore. It's Grace that we need to concentrate on. I mean, going back to memorabilia. I mean, I think he's going to run his course. I think that thing in his chest is going to do him in, probably in an episode or two. It's Grace we need to worry about.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm totally on board with that. But the thing is I, well, now that they've gone into her mind, I think they do have a hint. But based on at least what I'm assuming could be a previous timeline, they didn't know about her. The fact that Cicada even came back was a mystery, and they just assumed it was the same person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think, I think that's a very good point. And I agree. I think Cicada has just about run its course. I don't think he's going to have to last throughout the whole season, because I think we're slowly getting more and more revealed about Nora and Thon, that's slowly going to turn into our main plot.
Yep.
So yeah, I think Cicada's almost done. But there have been, you know, like with every big bad every season, there's just several points where you're like, why didn't you just do that? And it's like, well, we wouldn't have the rest of the season.
Yes.
And Jade and I have speculated about that since very early on in the season. Would there be multiple villains, multiple arcs? You know, I'll throw it out there and you'll go, oh my God, really? That too? We still have Caitlin's father running around out there, and he's not the best guy.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him.
So it's either, will Cicada run its course like you just said, or is this going to somehow pull all of these things together and just blow us away over the last 7 episodes?
Well, that could be interesting too, if it's all somehow interwoven. It would have been more, I feel like the Cicada, them not being able to defeat Cicada would have been more believable if they had Caitlin's father in the mix the whole time as another foe, so that there's concentrations divided. Mm. War on two fronts, if you will.
Hmm. Very good point. Yeah. It would have been more believable if they didn't have opportunities to actually stop him. Another That's foe true. Would have been, exactly. Another foe would have been a great way to do that. I'd say.
But I don't know that they entirely know how to stop him. I mean, sure, they have the cure now. And again, what does an hour in the Speed Force do to Barry? I would have loved to have seen that. Like, what did he do for 60 minutes in the Speed Force? Did he just stand there and hold the vial?
Was he talking
to Run around and explore? I don't know. That's what I want. I want and I think you guys have said this before, but I want an episode in the Speed Force. I mean, I guess we've kind of had those, but they've always been, I don't know, really odd. I want him in the Speed Force, but one where the Speed Force isn't trying to kill him. I just want some more answers about the Speed Force, and I feel like they've kind of come to some sort of equilibrium, but we just haven't gotten to see that yet, and that's what I want to see.
Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like every time we have an episode about the Speed Force, it's framed around the Speed Force, but we don't ever actually get to play in the Speed Force. I would love to see both Barry and XS, maybe an episode where they've just got some things to do in the Speed Force. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, I would like that. I think that could be a cool, like, I guess, bottle episode. Mm-hmm. Be pretty self-contained.
Yep. Well, I don't want bottle self-contained episodes in the last part of the season.
you're about to get one with Killer Shark and Grodd. So. But going back to the Medicure, Caitlin and her father are going to be immune to that thing. And so,
true.
You know, what does that mean for, you know, anything going forward with them?
Which makes me then say, well, what is Killer Frost worried about if she's not a true metahuman?
Yeah. True.
Yeah, but I can kind of understand, and I mean, I'm not sure. I can kind of understand why she would be worried, because that just seems like one step closer to a truer cure for metahumans, and there are a lot of people that won't be nearly as altruistic about it. I mean, look at half the science labs out there. All of them are creating crazy world-destroying robots and stuff like that. So one step closer to a meta cure is probably just a bad idea.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly not going to be a good idea.
No, easy to weaponize.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the amount of time jumps, and obviously Barry talks with Nora about this at the end of the episode, what are your thoughts on how all of these time jumps impact the universe at large?
I think that's my main question, because the way she always kind of talks about it, she says, sometimes I just run so fast, it just reverses. So she's almost describing it like a rewind button, but time doesn't really work that way. Plus, we had the reveals with Cisco being able to vibe, I guess, the, I don't know if they're considered now alternate timelines or ghosts of a ghost of a timeline. Like, I'm not really sure I'm understanding how that's working, but Barry seemed to pretty clearly say at the very end, it's time travel, like in the traditional sense, even though the way you're going about it is maybe a little bit different than just literally like running back in time. Or maybe that is her version of running back in time. They're just, she does it differently than he does it.
Well, I think there's definitely a rewind element to it. That's how they've presented it to us.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just confusing because can you really rewind time? And is that really not time travel? I don't know. Anyway.
I think that might be kind of the point, right? That since she's not trying to time travel, I could see how she could be very confused about it all, because her intent was never to time travel. Hey, I didn't go running to time travel. This thing happens, which means it's, you know, psychological somehow. We know that because she could control it at the end.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Is it time travel?
Well, I mean, she's got the ability to do both, because who taught her how to travel back in time to get to this point?
Right.
Well, exactly. So
I mean, she didn't rewind time 40 years to get here.
Right.
So she knows how to do two different things.
It's confusing. See, not to be funny, but I don't think they go back and explore this at all. Like, I mean, literally, they explain nothing. I mean, I just think this unwinds just way too much for them to really explore and all that. And she got the object lesson, which was you break the cup, you can't put it back together again, da 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 da, and we just move on. I don't think they pulled this tape out. So
I think there's a shot that maybe we get a little bit more about her, as again, I think that'll come through learning more about what her and Thawne are doing from the future.
Yeah.
And again, I think we need more than just bookend scenes of, or narration of, I think we need more scenes of them together, which I'm pretty sure we're going to get.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I'd love them to be the main plot in an episode coming up.
Just sitting there Hannibal Lecter style while she talks to him.
Well, I guess
for 45 minutes.
Hello, Nora.
Maybe like flashbacks of, or just not, just with that.
Sorry, Harley. Please, go ahead.
No, that is kind of a fair point. He's stuck in a cell. You can't really make a whole episode about that.
And they overlay the clock that's counting down for him, like the clock on 24.
Yeah, exactly. We've not gotten any more about that countdown. I'd be curious to see how much time has elapsed. Like, is she going back every 30 seconds? I mean, he didn't have much time left. Assuming it was in hours, I guess, or hours, minutes, whatever.
You watch, by the time we get to the season finale, that clock is going to be 42 minutes.
Well, Cisco getting his lady.
It was good. It was interesting, and it played into the story well. But again, it feels kind of like it's something for Cisco to do, but it's not really important. I don't know. It seemed like a lot of times Cisco was just not only comedy relief, but just something to have you look the other way just for a moment to eat up time. And I don't like that, because I like Cisco a lot.
Yeah. Somebody posted a nasty rumor in the Facebook group I saw that they're talking about him maybe leaving. I didn't click on it or open it or anything, but is there any validity to this?
I did click on the nasty link. And there are reports that Carlos Valdez may be leaving the show.
That's a bummer, but at the same time, I'm not surprised. Again, like, they've kind of sidelined his character a bit, and he's not getting a whole lot to do this season either. I mean, I think this episode he arguably got more to do, but again, it was because, you know, Grant Gustin, for whatever reason, wasn't really featured in this episode. I don't know if he was, you know, off filming something else or off on his honeymoon or what he was really doing, but that actually gave opportunity for the other cast, because our, you know, our main character was off in the Speed Force for whatever reason. So it was nice to see him use his vibe powers, but this is the most meaningful storyline that we've had, and it revolved around a botched first date. So not awesome for him.
Yeah, I would like to see Sisko develop. I mean, he's developed a lot as a character, as we've gotten to know him over the years. But it feels also like we've plateaued, as if, well, we know Sisko's good for the really witty one-liners, and he makes good tech, and he can open breaches. And then we just left it there. He's had some love problems. He's had a couple of girls. If he were to leave because of something like that, I could understand it, because where are you going to go with this character? It's not Vibe, it's the Flash, you know? So you can't push it much further than it already is. Well, you could, but I'm not sure that they're willing.
Yeah.
Dang, hurts my heart. They're going to Wally West him.
Oh, no. Is that a thing now? Is that what they call it these days? It's the Wally West treatment?
Well, if you think about it, you have two speedsters on the show, and when they didn't give one of those speedsters time, he left. Mm-hmm. Now they gave the second speedster time. Somebody's got to go. But then that's weird, because Nora's not going to be around next season as a, you wouldn't think she'd be a series regular and continue to spend time here in the present.
You wouldn't think. It'll be interesting to see how they end the season.
See what Thawne has to say about that.
Our things may multiply.
Although I would absolutely hate for Sisko to go, I would enjoy a show that was maybe pared down a little bit, you know, a few less grand characters. You know, a lot of the cast is, are metas, and there's so many to our little Flash fam that I'd say, but getting rid of a head or two would might be what we need to focus more on these characters, so that we can tell slightly different and slightly different stories that evolve in ways that we haven't seen. We can't really do that. We can only rehash right now a lot of tropes, a lot of stories that we've seen elsewhere, because too many moving parts, it feels like sometimes.
That's true. I mean, this show would get old real fast if it was Barry and the as the Flash, you know, fighting the Rogue of the Week every week. You know, we did that for 11 seasons with 10 seasons with Smallville.
Yeah.
But again, you know, in this show, season one was Wells, Joe, Caitlin, Sisko, Barry, Iris. We got way more than six people on the show now.
Yeah, always a problem with a large cast.
But the beautiful thing about a comic book show is nobody really dies. You go, you come back. When you come back, we call that the Roy.
Oh, no, we get the Roy treatment. All right.
And if you actually die, we call that the Stein treatment.
Oh, still
mad. But then you get to come back. Ouch. Then you get to come back as a puppet.
My bro.
So look forward to Old Man Sisko and Puppet Sisko.
Oh,
perfect.
Oh dear.
All right. Do we have any feedback?
We do have feedback for this episode, and thank you to everybody who's been listening along with the fun that we're having talking about The Flash. So here in episode 14, we did get another fantastic email from the incomparable Montefescu. Here we go. Hello, CCU Underground. Mixed Up Monty here. Take a messed up script and fix it in the shoot and during the edit. What do I mean? Let's dive in. So here he talks about directing, production values, and writing. I hate time travel stories because the writers usually trip over themselves when they either recycle the same scene sequence 5 times in a row or repeat the same script lines over and over. Here, though, the staff writers take the effort to mix it up and vary the viewing and hearing experience. So that little riffs like "The Men in This City," "Tell Me About It," "Ian, Ian, Stefan, Stefan," you have a different experience. Even the, quote, "way to goof up the timeline, Barry," plot device, which should be overused by now, is fresh painted with "way to goof up the timeline, Nora." Jeff Johns, this was in his run of The Flash, this was a plot staple. And this also shows us that Sherlock has needed 52 repeated data sets or transmissions to finally crack Nora's code, which we didn't even talk about. So he cracks the code, or he's gonna. Then also goes on to talk about acting. What another wipeout dramedy. Grant got put in the pipeline again, but when he explains multiverse fractalizing to Nora, it's fantastic. That bit of busy work in the coffee cup is how a good actor makes a talky two-shot scene kinetic. Is Nora not the greatest? How about Sisko and his partner in comedy crime, Ralph Dibny? The Book of Ralph, former sponsor of this very podcast, The Book of Ralph. Iris is also good. And how about Victoria Park Small? She needed to bring it so that date works, and even the barista played her comedy timing perfectly. And a little bit of trivia from Montefescu. Quote, "I think the needs of the story supply Cicada with his abilities. Normally, if I write it, I would just freeze the goof and let him get run over by a steamroller, but what fun is that?" He rated this episode also 10 out of 10 as we do math here on CCU. And a PS, way to screw up the timeline, Nora. How did she do? Well, Eobard is trying to save his butt, and there is that question she asked him after Barry explained about screwing up timelines. So, we'll see. I sure hope that Jessica Kennedy stays around, and with Kavanaugh, Kennedy, and Gustin, it is hard to find another stronger series of first leads than in the Berlantiverse, or on series television. That might be a stretch, that's my thought. Maybe The Good Place boasts such powerhouses, but I doubt it. Thanks, Montefescu. What are your guys' thoughts on all that?
Oh, that was a lot of feedback. he always has like a lot of really great points. I think the bit that I guess we didn't really talk about was kind of at the end where Sherlock actually like cracks the code. So I guess, I don't know, that could be an interesting conundrum. I've been waiting for him to confront her about it. So it'll be interesting to get to see that and see if she does end up fessing up to her parents or not.
I hope very early on in the next episode, we do get like, I want to know what's in this book. What has she been writing down? What has the other person been writing down? Will cracking the code let him know, Sherlock, who the other person is? So many questions.
So many questions.
Are we convinced the other person is Thawne? I mean, is that absolute?
I think it's assumed. I don't know that it's been explicitly stated.
Because that could be quite interesting if there was a surprise. Oh, it was actually...
Ba-ba-ba!
Yeah, exactly. but, you know, I believe... I agree with Monty there. Rachel Talalay, who's the director, did a great job. I've noticed her work on several other things. And so many times I'm like, oh, that was great. I actually noticed the direction in a good way. And I look at the name and it's Rachel Talalay. I saw her name flash up when this episode started. And as usual, she didn't let me down. It was directed very well. She's right about that.
Now, as I was giving Monty a hard time, that's really not my point at all. I love that he puts as much fervor and detail and excitement into what he really enjoys as much as what he doesn't. So always appreciate his feedback and his just attention to all the things that, that make a good episode.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Montefescu, for sending that in and for all three episodes. And we look forward to getting your feedback the rest of the season. We did get one more piece of feedback, and this comes to us in two parts. Here's part one.
Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Things that made me go ooh in this episode, that battle jumping in and out of portals, reversing time, ice powers, extending arms, purple lightning, so much ooh there. Things that made me say, ooh, ouch. Every single person getting a cicada dagger in the back. That sure was painful to watch over and over. Did you notice? Cicada was right. He said he was going to defeat every single one of them. And in a way, he did, even though the good guys did win in the end. Things that made me go, ooh, aww. Daddy-daughter talks. Barry at the beginning telling her that he had faith in her. She could do this. Keep the city safe for 60 minutes. And then giving her the timeline teacup talk that Jay Garrick has given him. That you can try to fix the timeline, but it's never quite the same. I know Nora broke time, but I'm so glad she's getting to have these moments with her father. Did you see that smirk? Sherlock had a smirk. He's definitely starting to figure stuff out. You can see it in his eyes. And really, who better to decode the plan of an evil mastermind, who is essentially himself? So probably he knows exactly how Reverse Flash thinks. I felt so bad for Nora in this episode. You could just see her frustration building and building. And that sadness at the end, the sadness in her eyes when she's talking to Eobard, because now she knows Eobard killed her grandparents. And she knows that Eobard killed Sisko in an alternate timeline. But she wants to save her father so badly that I think she's going to continue to listen to him and work with him anyway. But that actress did a beautiful job portraying her internal struggle on the matter. Because it's becoming more and more clear to Nora just how evil Reverse Flash is. This episode gets 9 out of 10 lessons it takes 52 times to learn. Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Oh, shrap. Did I already call you once? I'm having a serious case of deja vu today. Fins versus fangs. Fins versus fangs. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Is it March 5th yet? Have a super week. Green Butterfly out. Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Oh, shrap. Did I already call you once?
That was amazing.
That was awesome. Always, yeah. Always.
But now to her point, and the one thing that really stuck out in her message was, I don't think Nora has really any clue how bad Thawn is. And I get that she wants to save her father, but I don't think she's putting a lot of these pieces together about him. Like Justina picks up on, yeah, Sisko said, yeah, I got a hand through the heart. I don't know how much that registered with Nora.
Hmm. Yeah, that is a good point. And yeah, this is, I think we all agree, this is what we're waiting for from episodes 16, because we're probably not going to get much in 15, but 16 going forward, as to what this relationship between Nora and Thawne really is, the history of it, what their intentions are, and then how he's, as my 10-year-old says, he's going to get out of there and stab somebody in the back.
You know it.
Yep.
Shout out to the little Vox.
There you go.
Who we hear is a big fan of the show. So
absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely.
Thank you to everybody who sent in feedback. Thank you to Montefescu. Thank you to the Green Butterfly. Thank you to X-Force 11. Keep the feedback coming in. The way you can do that, you can call the GSM feedback line at 304-837-2278. You can also go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. You can also connect with the podcast on Twitter at TheFlashGSM. And we referenced it a couple times in this episode. If you're not a part of our Facebook community, head over to facebook.com/groups/TheFlashGSM. Jada, there's only one thing left to do.
What's that?
Flash forward.
Oh, wait, no, that's Flash Gordon.
How's it going,
everybody? Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Oh, shrimp.
You're a mess.
Did she call?
Oh, everybody!
Did she actually call the third time, or did you rerun? Did you rewind that a second time?
She called the first time. The second message, I just played it again to start it again the third time.
Okay, yeah, there.
Oh, I thought she. Oh, you got me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I thought so. That's awesome.
Flash Season 5, Episode 15: King Shark versus Gorilla Grodd. What do you guys think is going to happen here? What do you guys think is going to be the deal between King Shark and Gorilla Grodd? How are we going to get these two together, and why are they fighting?
I don't know, but I'm excited.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm super excited.
The effects budget all into one episode.
Yes. It's going to be wonderful. I have to admit, I'm not looking forward to any kind of actual plots, because I think it might be kind of thin since it's a one-off and there's so much going on, but whatever it is, I am down.
All I'm going to say regarding this episode, we've name dropped them a couple of times, I'm putting Tony and Joe on blast to get feedback on this episode after it airs.
Yeah.
So
The only bad part is that we have to wait till March 5th.
Yeah.
Arrow, The Flash, and Black Lightning all are off until that week. So take a little break.
So we'll see you after the March 5th episode. Here at the end, for those who are loyal listeners, we do apologize for the delay. But in the grand scheme of podcasting, after a few weeks, you're never going to know there was a big gap between this episode and the last one. But if you're hearing this the day it comes out, we're apologizing for the delay. As we wrap up this episode, we want you to tell somebody else about this show. Rate and review the podcast wherever you consume content. And thank you to our special guest today. Please say goodbye.
After you, Harley.
Thanks for having me. Always a blast to be on Central City Underground. So this is Harley Quinn, and I'm out.
And the exact same here. This is the Silver Vox signing out.
Holly Vox, thank you very much. It was great having you guys on here. This is Story's Voice, and I'll see you guys next week.
This is the Professor. We will see you next time. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Awesome.
Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky. Oh, shrimp.